Hello and welcome to episode 14 of Heroic Stats, an Any Heroics podcast. My name is Stephen. I'm joined today by the intern, John Partridge, and Dave Farmer, the Bond villain. If you're not aware of who we are of course Any Heroics, the only GBHL team with a 100% flat management structure. I am the current rankings officer and captain of Any Heroics. John, you are the artisan of the West from last year, just a hobbyist, you swear. For about 6 months, you were noob of the year last year, weren't you? Best newcomer.
And then it all came crashing down when other people realised they could play the game.
Yes. And Dave is arguably one of the best British players to ever play the game, having podiumed the league multiple times and won many, many, many GBHL 100s.
At least two.
I'm aware of. If you don't know what we do here, we review the tournaments of the weekend gone by. We talk about hobby stuff, anything that takes our fancy, really. So yeah, welcome back. Or if this is your first time listening, welcome. First of all, we do of course have to mention that we are affiliated with the wonderful Firestorm Games. Make sure to get all of your hobby supplies, miniatures, anything unrelated. I'm pretty sure they do like anime, like figurine Bojumajiggies. That's how my dad would describe it. Star Wars stuff.
Like, said with all the confidence of a man who didn't check before.
Lorcana, they definitely do. For sure.
Which is dangerous.
Oh no. John's going to be using our affiliate link in a second.
Can we use our affiliate link to buy burgers in their on site kitchen? I was going to call it a restaurant, but it's not a restaurant. The kitchen.
I don't think we can.
Damn.
But if you are looking for good prices on all your hobby related stuff, check out the link in the description or the QR code that is on your screen right now. First of all, what have we been up to hobby wise in the last week?
Well, I've been hard at work correcting. I bought a secondhand a mounted ring wraith because I wanted one for a potential army list. Ooh, there he is. And I've been hard at work in the last 10 to 15 minutes cutting off all of the previous owner's horrible glue work and putting his arm in the correct position so it doesn't look ridiculous. I'm looking forward to getting some spray down. I've also decided it's finally time to try and expand my Mordor horizons. I'm a big Mordor enjoyer. I've got a bunch of the old the made-to-order metal orc archers, which I really like, and I've got 8 of them, and I've been meaning to paint them for bloody ages. So maybe they'll be on the docket next, along with my Great Beast of Gorgoroth.
Nice.
So maybe that might rock up in a tournament at some point.
Nice.
Hopefully on this show, on the podium, but, you know, can't promise that.
I did the horribly onerous task of painting 2 models for my list for the last weekend and then borrowed the other 4 from David Clubley.
Frenemy
of the podcast, friends with 2 of the 3 hosts.
We made up. We're besties now.
Oh, are you?
3 of the 3 hosts. Do I have to have a beef with him now?
Yeah.
That's going to be difficult. He's one of my main practice partners.
He's going to give me a lovely expose in the Bugle.
Oh, nice.
display board gate.
Which one? They have multiple gates.
All of them. The gates of Gondolin. Sorry, Stephen, I interrupted you.
I was going to say, I've got a big weekend coming up. I'll hopefully get my armies of Thranduil like mostly done this weekend, if things go to plan. By which I mean, if my loving girlfriend badges me enough to paint the models because she wants to, but I definitely don't, which is a bit opposite, but we're here for it. Moving on to the first event of the weekend, which we're going to talk about.
Yeah.
That still only counts as one, which was a GBHL 80 down in Factorum. As previously mentioned, holds a special place in mine and Elliot's hearts. Some of the first tournaments we ever won were there. Best painted was James and Simon with their lovely grey company list, you can see in front of you, with some alternate sculpts for the elves and a couple of the men. And podium was Ryan Beattie and Mike Arnold in first. They had a Lothlorien, Misty Mountain, Rivendell soup, There was Mark O'Brien and Chris Hall in second with Isengard and Easterlings. Reminder that Isengard does not have a U in it, as discussed with Dewey earlier. And in third place was James Harding and Simon Hyatt with their Grey Company. You can see in front of you now.
Yeah. And they were the guys that won Best Painted.
Most spotting was a four-way tie, which is very Factorum. If you ever go there, which you should if you're in the Bristol Bath area, lovely place to play. You go there with a sense of humour. Everyone there is lovely and just speaks volumes to the kind of people that go. Thank you very much, Ryan, for sending me the results. We're putting this in as mostly as a thank you to yourself, because we didn't plan on covering this 80. And that kind of brings us on to a little tiny, not announcement, but a discussion point of, we will always try and cover tournaments when we have time. If we've got two or more hundreds or hundreds and a competitive event from another region, we will probably cover those while also talking about maybe the results of other 80s and 90s if we have time. As we say, some weekends there's like five tournaments. We can't cover them all. We will always do our best to give shout outs where relevant, though.
We'll be prioritizing competitive tournaments where possible, which would mean 90s and 100s and things.
Yeah. Now, that's not a slight against 80s. I love 80s. They're the only tournament that I can actually win on my own. And it's always a good vibe at an 80. But in terms of helping the wider community learn about lists which are winning, talking about a 500-point Gil-galad Kiadan list which has four might and pretending it's good, no, we're not doing that.
It does have a lot of fight value and also plus one to wound spears, though.
Do let us know in the comments if you think this is a whack idea and you actually would prefer to kind of... We could cover all the tournaments, but we have to go into less detail. We'd have to be briefer.
Time
let us know what you want, kind of the time of actually recording. We don't want these to go over an hour. Time of kind of putting the points together. We're churning through interns at a rapid pace.
Yeah. It is also worth noting that we can't always get the... we don't always have spies at events to get us the results and painted and whatnot.
Yeah.
So sometimes if you don't see an event covered, that's why. Either we haven't had the foresight or... Yeah,
foresight of the Eldar doesn't always land. Now, what I would say is the more events there are, the more difficult it is and the more work it is to get all together. So that's worth considering.
Yeah.
I was just appreciating some of these miniatures. I see they've got the plastic Legolas, Gimli and Aragorn, but then the rest of these, I think, are third party of some description. That's definitely not an Eladan or Elrahir model I've seen before for the Grey.
They're much nicer than the actual Eladan and Elrahir models.
I quite like the
dynamic poses.
It's nice. I thought for a second it was a converted version of the plastic Elrond, but that's pretty clearly a third party miniature, I think. But it looks nice.
Yeah, the gold banding is slightly different on the armor.
Yeah, that would be the clue. Sorry, John, you were saying something.
Stephen, a minute ago, you mentioned spies at events. We actually had a spy across the pond in the Atlantic who I think reached out to David Farmer. So I'll let Dave cover our next event.
Yeah. So this is a listener and member of the Guardians Discord, Alex Anglin, reached out to me and asked if I'd be interested in covering a GBHL 90, essentially equivalent. It's from Calgary in Canada. He was keen to get more ears potentially on this scene because, I mean, this wasn't a massive tournament, but some of the attendees had to travel about 4 hours because Canada is bloody massive. So growing the scene and letting more people know about that there are tournaments going on in the area was part of the goal. Now, this was interesting. This was a 650-point tournament. 2 days, 5 games, only 16, it was up to 24 players, but only 16 attendees. It was within pool veto, and pool 5 was not played. Now, I should have checked this, but I don't remember which one pool 5 is off the top of my head. So let's have a quick look in my match play guide. That is maneuvering. So Storm the Camp, Recon, Divide and Conquer, which, I mean, I guess they just rolled them and played them in order.
Yeah. But I think the lack of maneuvering scenarios is reflected in the some of the armies will see
on the success. But I mean, I would imagine they didn't know that that wasn't going to be maneuvering before the tournament. I think it was probably just roll the pools as they came up, although I'm not 100% certain on that. And then you veto within pool, so you can mitigate for certain factors. Anyway, let's have a quick look at the lists.
Yeah, before we look at this, what are your guys' general thoughts on veto? Do you like veto? Do you think veto in pools is better than kind of random veto?
What were the points of this tournament? Do we know?
650.
Sorry, you did say it's not written in front of me, so immediately dropped down my bag. I'm expecting to see Goblin Town and Lake Town without having looked at the results. So I think that's my issue. My only issue with veto, I really enjoy it because it lets me take lists that suck at a single scenario. Like if you go into Seize the Prize without March and without Magic and without Cavalry, you're going to have a bad time.
Yeah. I think vetoes disproportionately buff up certain lists, but at the same time, I think variety is the spice of life. I think occasionally playing veto tournaments is a great way to expand the way the game feels. This is probably disproportionately more of an issue for players like myself who go to a lot of tournaments. I think the fewer you go to, maybe veto feels a bit better because you're more able to run the thing that you like and not get screwed by the scenarios quite so much. Because obviously if I'm going to, you know, six tournaments in 3 or 4 months and I know that I can just chance it and take a list that might get screwed in a scenario or in a matchup, I can then say, okay, I'll just run my you know, all mounted Rohan or whatever, and then know that maybe I'll have a tournament where the luck just goes against me. But if I'm only able to play one tournament every 3 months, I maybe would take, I'd fall back towards taking something much more secure and much less likely to get screwed by things. But that also means that if you have veto, you can, that expands the amount you can play. But basically, if you play a lot of tournaments, I think veto becomes less appealing. And if you play not many tournaments, veto becomes more appealing. So smaller scenes, I think, gravitate towards veto so that people can use what they want. At least that's my read on it anyway.
Yeah.
I think that's pretty insightful. That's why we have you on the pod, Dave.
I talk too much.
I think the lack of the maneuvering scenarios also means there's some armies which really excel at those. Or
yeah.
Like what, Steve?
Yeah. Where any models with free marches or with lots of mobility, I was going to say Spider Queen, suddenly just screams at you and goes, ha, I've won recon. GG.
Yeah, kind of.
What sort of armies do you think would benefit from not having the maneuvering scenarios?
Well, dwarves. Again, I... Yeah.
Dwarves.
Yeah.
Funny you should say. So our third place list was Erebor Reclaimed, as Stephen alluded to unwittingly. 33 dwarfs, got Old Man Dane, King Under the Mountain, 2 Goat Riders, 4 Iron Hills with Crossbow and Spear, 5 Iron Hills with Spear, and 6 Iron Hills Dwarfs. Then you've got Dwalin, Champion of Erebor, with 2 Iron Hills Goat Riders, 4 Iron Hills Dwarfs with Crossbow and Spear, 4 Iron Hills Dwarfs with Spear, and 4 Iron Hills Dwarfs.
I quite like this list.
Yeah, I'm looking thinking, oh God.
That's a lot of Goat Riders as well. That is 4. That's
too many.
A lot. I don't think it's too many, but what I would say is, there's another thing. This is a little thing, but there's 3 points left over. Just give Spears. He's got 9 on his dwarves without Spears. Just give 3 of them Spears.
Especially when the ones with just shield, you have to go out of your way to get those.
You have to get them custom or convert them.
Personally, I'm looking at this list thinking you should be 34 models, but it's probably fussy to drop a goat, right? That's Dwalin without goat.
Yeah, you can't take the goat in this list. Dwalin can't have the goat in this. But confusingly, Erebor Reclaimed has 2 versions. This is the version that is colloquially known as Old Dane version. So a King Under the Mountain Dane as opposed to Lord of the Iron Heels Dane. And this version, he gets the army bonus aware 6-inch banner effect for everything with Erebor, but then also the Iron Heels Dwarves all get the Erebor keyword as well. So there's no banner in this, but I think you wouldn't miss it. there are a couple of scenarios where you might, but again, it's veto, so you're never going to have to play them if you don't want to. It's kind of slow, but this has got, what, 9 crossbows, 8 crossbows? Pretty decent. I agree with you, Stephen. I'd drop one of the Goat Riders for a... because you've got the spare points as well. You can have another 2 dwarves. Yeah. Max out your crossbows, probably. If you're going to have crossbows, I think you probably want to max them here. But at the same time, like, 8 is fine. And Dwalin on foot is extremely killy. He's strength 5 with +1, and he has 4 attacks on foot.
Yeah, and he's just such a beat stick. Like, he will kill 2 models every turn about 75% of the time.
On average, he walks through, like, even D7 models pretty comfortably, and he's great at killing heroes. So this isn't like super-duper spicy or anything, but it's just solid. And actually, I think a lot of goats is actually quite good because they have this annoying-ass rule where when they charge on a 5+, anything infantry they hit gets knocked prone.
Mm.
So you have an opportunity. With that many goat riders, you have the opportunity to use them like heavy cavalry and speculatively try and fish for knockdowns. They have lances too. Strength 4 with lances is actually... I don't think there's any other cav in the game apart from camel riders that get that, which is actually... extremely potent, because if you run into D6, especially fight 3 D6, you just run it down.
Do we think that Old Dane is better than, say, Thorin King Under the Mountain?
They're different
with, in this list.
Yeah, they're different. The problem with Thorin King Under the Mountain is you lose the reroll, so you need a banner. Because Thorin King Under the Mountain would only affect Dwalin if you swapped him out. Because the old that version, Iron Hills Dwarves still have the Iron Hills keyword. Ali makes the case that this should really be a different army list. He calls it the Kingdom of the Lonely Mountain, just to differentiate it.
Yeah, Lord of the Rings era Erebori claimed. I've heard it mentioned.
In there. the real issue with dwarves actually is they have so many army lists that get cut up pointlessly. I mean, see also Kingdom of Khazad-dûm and Kingdom of Moria are sort of the same list, but not really, depending on hero choices. And this is the same Erebori claimed. I don't know why dwarves get this and other lists don't, but there you go. Poor guys. Anyway, I like this list, actually. I think this is pretty good.
Yeah. So, yeah, we've seen that dwarves can kind of benefit from maybe no maneuvering scenarios.
Let them cook. List.
So our second place list is a different flavor of dwarves.
Is it going to be Kingdom of Khazad-dûm in first place? I really hope it is.
Mardin. Something like Mardin only, baby.
Just Mardin.
No one could possibly succeed
so with Mardin. So Kevin O'Kane took second place, bringing Army of Thrall. He's got Granddaddy Thor with 13 Grim Hammers, who are upgraded to Guardians of the King.
Very good.
Young Thorin with the Oaken Shield, 6 warriors of Erebor with shield, 5 warriors with shield and spear, 1 warrior with just a spear. And he's got a Captain of Erebor with 6 warriors with shield and spear, 4 warriors with shield.
This guy has... I want to say he should have some more spear warriors, but he's got 38 models, which is 650 when they're all dwarves, is really, really nice. The reason why I think he should have more spears is behind the Guardians of the King, but he's got enough spears to support Thorin and the...
I would agree with you. I think drop one model. 37 is still great. Also, that warrior with spear, no shield. No.
Everyone dwarf, must be give shield. Always D7. Give shield.
Yeah. D7 and then 8 for Thorin and 9 for Thrall. So yeah, definitely do that. This is good. It's got March, it's got everything. Again, you can save points on the banner because Thrall is a 6-inch banner, because apparently that's the only army bonus dwarves are allowed to have. An underrated thing, Thorin's to arm special rule with Grimmer Hammers, a god is the king, is actually pretty good. I mean, it's not fantastic, but +1 strength, when you consider they can also piercing strike, you can get like
mini dwarves.
If you want, you can get strength 6, and it's just pretty sketchy. Only within 3 of Thorin, but it is all Erebor dwarves, so that also applies to your captains. So it can get pretty scary pretty quick. I mean, captains have axes, strength 4 basic, up to strength 5, up to strength 6. Anytime you get, if you get a good turn off with the 2 arms, you can really, really sell it. Get your heroes in, do a heroic combat, and put Thorin where he's most needed, and you just absolutely chop. He's pretty scary.
An exceptional profile for his cost.
Well, Thorin, I think it's very good.
Young Thorin Oakenshield, even Thorin's company, Thorin, for his points cost is incredibly good.
Yeah, he's got some good bits and bobs. He's fight six, he's D8, three attacks, three wounds, everywhere. High courage, threes everywhere, strike, defense.
The Oaken drinks. Shield also, it has just like that niche little special rule for when you need to hold something up.
It's shielding, so you roll six dice to win the fight and you can still make a strike, particularly irritating if you happen to be like fishing for a wound on horse or something. If someone charges you, you just shield and then you win the roll off because you've got the six and they're fight six as well, and then you just poke their horse with your Oaken Shield. It's very annoying. For an Oaken Shield, the main thing he's lacking is any kind of additional damage output other than the arms, which I already explained, which is only a 3-inch bubble, by the way. It's not fantastic. So this list could maybe do with some plus one to wound in there, but actually it's got 15 strength four models and a ton of bits and bobs. Like, this is just going to crush by weight of numbers. And most enemy heroes, if they don't have plus one or strength five, are going to take a long time to get through that many D7 models. Yeah. And it's got 13 throwing axes, just to really be a hater. Yeah, it's pretty nice. I think Army of Thor is actually underrated. The main thing it lacks is like X factor, is what I call it. Like, it doesn't have game-winning capability in a losing situation a lot of the time. Like, you don't have that counter punch ability. You just have to sort of say, all right, I hope I start rolling better. So that's one of the reasons why it's not super competitive. But I do think Army of Thrall has a really strong niche in like team formats, where you can get extremely large numbers of D7, which is great to throw in front of something that's trying to chop through you fast, and you're like, nope, here's 45 D7 models to deal with.
Right.
Yeah, it's a good summary.
Right, Stephen, what's your prediction for first place?
Goblin Town or Kingdom of Khazad Dûm /Moria, Kingdom of Moria.
Okay, you're absolutely wrong, so you can read this one out.
Of course. It's Mordor Serpent Horde. It's Suladan, Armored Horse, the usual Serpent Riders. Six Serpent Riders? What on earth? What an entire nation?
Your mother's barn door.
Merchant Guard, two Watchers of Karna, a Haradrim King with horse and war spear, a Haradrim Raider with war spear, and 12 Haradrim Warriors with bow with poison arrows. You know, what I love about this Serpent Horde list is that I don't have to go through 12 different warrior types in each warband. And then it's the Betrayer on horse with six Black Numbs and six Brandon Orcs with spear. I'll be honest, looking at it, me no likey.
So this mad lad has got six spears and that's it. Sorry. Well, I mean, technically he's got war spears on the Raider and the six Serpent Riders, but you'd have to dismount. Oh, and the King as well. You'd have to dismount to use them as spears. I don't really get this, to be honest. I see, like, the Betrayer is not getting great value here in Mordor.
Yeah, you've got 12 models.
You've not maxed out your Harad bows. So the Mordor stuff isn't benefiting from the Betrayer's presence apart from the Terror and the Harbinger. And then the Bowfire, it's like, the Bowfire is good. And the Betrayer makes it even better, but you only have 12 bows, which in a list at 650, like a Harad list like this, if you just took the Betrayer from the Harad army list, you could pretty comfortably be dropping 17 bows if you put one of them on the hero, I reckon. Admittedly, this has got a nice D6 line, although I noticed the Marauders don't have shields, so they are a bit softer. And yeah, other than that little bit, you don't really have a battle line. Having said that, this may be intended to be some sort of a hammer and anvil type list. So you use your Harad warriors to force people to come to you. You have a bit of an anvil and then Black Numenorians and the Morannans, and then you have quite a lot of cavalry. I mean, he's got eight cav with lances plus Suladan, that's including the king. I mean, that's quite a lot. And 40 models total is also quite a lot. I just think this list is sort of caught between two worlds, but I mean, he won the tournament, so... And I think he was the only undefeated player. Yeah,
I wonder if this was... He's Serpent Riders are not terrible at taking out dwarves. Any lance cavalry against dwarves is not the worst. And they're fight four. They got the poison on them. It does feel like this list has an identity crisis, in my opinion. Now, I always feel bad when I look at a list which has won a tournament and I think I don't like it. I think it could be better this way. But to be honest,
you don't like it. You think it could be better this way.
Exactly. I think it could be better if it was pure Serpent Horde or if it was Barndor style Serpent Horde Mordor. But
yeah, like play Mordor. Yeah, I think for me the weak link is almost the betrayer. I feel like if you're going to do the Mordor of Wraith, I think you'd do better with the Shadow Lord.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of thing.
You can leverage your bows because people have to come to you, because not only do you have good bows with rerolls and good amounts of them, you've also got the Shadow Lord effect.
So you wouldn't have to change this very much to make it more into a list that I would like, I think. Even if you want to keep it this style, where you've got the Cylinder and the Horrid King, what I would do there, I think, is swap the Betrayer for the Shadow Lord, drop a Serpent Rider down to just a regular Serpent Guard or a Spearman, drop the Merchant Guard down to regular Spearman, just so you have guys to put behind your Warriors, and then you can keep the same number, or even just drop a Serpent Rider down to a Serpent Guard, and then you can upgrade. You can throw some spears on some of the bowmen because that gets you an extra 5 points.
Yeah.
I think because six Serpent Rider, six troop cav is crazy. Seven troop cav he's got. I think for me, that's excessive. Especially when there's no maneuvering. Although again, I don't think they knew that going into the tournament. I think this is a cool list. I think it's sort of like 60% of the way to completion of this concept. I think this is definitely something, like, I actually do like lots of infant, like, I realize this playing against Dewey's Seven Horde. I think spam, like, extra cav with lances, basic cav, is actually underrated. I think I personally underrate it. I think I go for numbers generally and don't take that much warrior cavalry. And actually, if you can get cheap, so particularly Serpent Riders and I think Knights of Minas Tirith are the obvious choices. Below 15 points, and they have, I mean, I think Royal Guard in pure Rohan are good for this as well. Keeping it cheap and giving him like a lot of lance cav gives you so much like objective fighting control, because you can pretty much always guarantee you're going to get your charging cav versus a single enemy model. And if you do that, two dice versus probably one or maybe two if they shield, you can then have a good chance of winning, and then a very good chance of just stabbing them to death with your lance.
You also have the obviously a cavalry charging into a on foot hero it's usually quite threatening. But let's say you're a strength four cavalry charging into a D7 hero, you're probably not going to wound them if they lose. They're not too bothered about spending might. But if you've got a lance and you're going to fives with four dice, you could just kill that hero. So you suddenly got this pressure to force the opponent to spend their might to win the fight.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I've had some success using a large amount of Rivendell Knights purely because it was for points purposes to fill out warbands. And what it really came down to...
I'm really good at this as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're really expensive at 22 points, but, well, 22 points with shield, you don't take them without shield unless you're at Bath. Hashtag water. But they cut through dwarves like butter. If you've got what is essentially a cheaper Rivendell Knight, albeit almost half the points.
A cheaper Rivendell Knight with a lot of the things missing.
With the fight and the armor and the bow missing. But they're there just for the killing purposes. You swoop in once you've baited your opponent towards you. I do like the concept, and it's very like actual military tactics kind of style. I do like that.
Funny you mentioned that, because Alex, when we were talking on Discord, was saying that he had a real soft spot for trying to recreate specific military tactics as he was taught, which I think is interesting. Also worth noting, by the way, 650, there was an Arnor player who had max rangers, didn't end up doing super well, but I think Arnor at 650 with no Warhorn and that many models is just nasty.
Nasty. Thank you very much for sending us the results. If you are and someone overseas, please, you know, drop us a message, drop us a Discord, YouTube comment, whatever. We're interested in global meta because we are very Barndor pilled over here.
Just for any international viewers that don't know what Barndor is, it's what literally everybody in the UK calls Mordor Cylidan, because it's Farmer Mordor Barndor.
Yeah.
Alex asked me to mention that if you're listening to this and you know anyone who's in Western Canada or Northwestern USA is interested in coming to Calgary for tournaments, hit him up on Discord at Rowdy Canadian or email at Calgary MESBG Slow Grow at gmail.com. That's all one word. So Calgary MESBG Slow Grow at gmail.com.
I'll put the email.
Put it in the description.
And making those kind of like, you're thinking about playing the game and then making that leap to actually playing the game, that's one of the best decisions I ever made in my life.
Well, I'm assured that the Calgary lads are good lads.
So. Yeah, the Canadians. Yeah. So
they have good craft.
It must be lovely.
Surely. I mean, I can't possibly verify that, but you know, Alex told me and therefore I believe him.
Let's move on to our biggest tournament of the weekend. It was City of Steel, a GBHL 100 held in Sheffield, Northern England, ran by Ali Prince. There were 65 players who competed across six games at 700 points with special banners. Who wants to elaborate on special banners?
I'll do a rundown. So the premise of this tournament was Ali is a fan. This is Ali King, just to be clear. He is a fan of Sharp, the TV show, and was watching it, and the discussion of the King's colours comes up. And obviously his name is Ali King, so he's like, aha, that's something I could base a tournament around that. So he suggested, the idea of the tournament is, if you ran a pure army list, so as in a single army list with no allies, you could take a free 6-inch banner with a variety of possible effects that could go on any one of your troops, a single wound troop. The six banners were, there was a one that gave blinding light to everyone within six. There was one that gave Harbinger of Evil to every effect within 12. There was one that, there was one that provided Fortify Spirit effect to everyone within six. There was one that provided a +1 buff to fight value to all infantry, all troops, so no heroes, within six. There was one that, there was one that gave a point of might back to every hero, a hero within 3 inches. The banner itself was still a 6-inch effect, but the might buff value was within six, which is similar to the Royal Standard of Rohan, but better because it was just any might back. Spoilers, but that was a very, very popular banner. I can't remember the last one. I'm doing this all the top of my head. What was the sixth one? Can you guys remember?
I think you've named them all, haven't you?
No, there were six.
There was Fight Value, there was Fearless, there was Harbinger. Fearless,
that's the one I did.
Yeah.
Okay.
There's one, yes, that was also a relatively... So in terms of popularity, the most popular by far was the Might banner. I think maybe 2/3 of everyone took that one because a lot of people correctly ascertained that might is always valuable no matter your matchup. Some people decided they wanted to run an army that normally would have a vulnerability to shooting and would take that. Some people would, you know, as a mitigation. Some people took armies that have a weakness with courage and took that. You know, it's a clever thing. And I really enjoyed it. And it meant that we saw there was another one. There was a bonus tournament point if you captured the enemy's King's colors. So the banner rules were slightly different, which meant that if you killed them in combat, they would not have the option to pass it to another model like you normally do with banners. The killer would get first dibs to grab it, essentially.
Which so you meant could yoink with spears, which was hilarious.
Which is fun. And then if you'd stolen the enemy King's colors, they had the opportunity to get them back off you as a light object. And if they got it back on one of their own models, they'd then get their banner back, essentially. Which is actually a very, very cool concept for a tournament. And yeah. Lots of little stuff like you got your whole army gets -1 courage if your banner has been stolen, that kind of thing. Very, very
cool.
The man
who loses the king's colors loses the king's friendship.
Exactly. We love Sharp. and also it meant that army building was interesting because it was essentially a free, 6-inch banner, so it's better than 25 points, but it meant that you could build a little bit more aggressively at 700 points, which is how much it was. The scenarios were known ahead of time, which were Lords of Battle, Divide and Conquer, A Fog of War, Recon, Breakthrough, and To the Death. So finishing with To the Death as the classic Capture the Banner scenario, which is pretty cool. Yeah, really enjoyable tournament. And it meant that I think almost everybody, I think there were two people who took Legendary Legions, but almost everybody took a pure list, which was the idea, essentially. There was quite a lot of Mordor, quite a lot of Angmar, some Minas Tirith, lots of different variety, but I think Lothlorien was very popular, Isengard was popular, a lot of army lists that do a lot of things. Anyway, let's look at some lists. I've waffled on.
All right. Before we look at lists, so most sporting went to Matt Hudson, mm-hmm. and best painted went to John Partridge. We've got some photos of the intern's army. Not actually from... Times. Will we edit that out? Who knows? that's a photo. Obviously, I can't win anything without a display board.
You had Shagrat in your army, did you?
No, I didn't have the mouth. but I didn't take any photos. But these, I also didn't have Suladam. But
yeah,
hey ho.
Basically, it's important to show the display board.
Yeah, that was my banner. You've got poor old strung up Frodo being saved by Sam and Orkarma. I'm not sure the photography does me any favors there.
I was going to say there was a separate competition for best King's Colors. So we were encouraged to do a custom. Yeah, John cleaned up all three of the best painted awards. But yeah, you were encouraged to come up with custom King's Colors. Not everybody did, but John rose to the occasion spectacularly with a
crucified Frodo.
Yeah.
What better opportunity to show some of the new models I painted just for this army? We like being quite self-indulgent here on the podcast, so I made sure to kind of
look at those balls.
You gotta paint all the details. I had a fish, that was quite fun. And then this is some more photos of the display board because
Charlie,
that is to show off
a cat belonging to a friend of ours.
Yeah, he's lovely, the most cat. Fantastic cat,
lovely friend.
Yeah. Cool.
Shout out Matt and Jess.
That's enough kind of self promotion. Let's do some more self promotion for somebody else on the pod.
What? Who could this be?
It's David Farmer or Dave Farmer.
Yeah, that's right.
So Dave, who came up with this list all by himself.
I don't know why you're joking about that because I definitely did. But yeah, it's the Witch King on horse with a crown, 3 might, 2 will, 2 fate. Very budget. There's a ring race. As Witch Kings go. Then we've got 6 black Numenoreans, 6 Morennans with spear and shield, one of whom has taken the King's colors. I see this has given it up to 2725, but obviously that was for free in this tournament. 3 trackers. Then we've got Shadow Lord with 2 Warg riders with throwing spear and 3 trackers. And he's on a horse. And we've got Gothmog, who had Warg and shield. And then 6 black Numenoreans, 6 Brennan Orcs with spear and shield, and 3 Orc trackers. So essentially, 12 black Nums were backed up by Morennans, 9 trackers, a couple of Warg riders, and then the trifecta of Witch King, Shadow Lord, Gothmog.
You built this list knowing exactly which scenarios were going to come up.
Yeah. Essentially, yes.
Yeah. And also looking at the current meta going, crossbows.
I looking at this, I every time I was sort of wondering about taking army lists with the Blinding Light banner, thinking that'd be nice, but then I kept coming back around to, but if I just take an army that has Blinding Light or the Shadow Lord, then I can have the Might banner and also, you know, and essentially also Blinding Light. So and given the fact that capturing the King's colors was worth a tournament point, I decided I wanted a list that was going to be good at that. And this is good at that. Double casters will always be good at that kind of thing. I captured every King's Colors in the games that I won. In the game I lost, I got absolutely smashed. So no chance to capture any colors in that one. But it was a very solid list. Gothmog is expensive for what he offers. Unfortunately, it's only 38 models. I mean, say only, that's a decent number, but it was. I think I started out at parity or slightly behind in a lot of my games, which with this list you have to kill a bit to catch up. But it does do everything. You've got March, you've got a couple of strikers, you've got so the logic behind Gothmog was essentially Master of Battle, because this tournament might was going to be a lot more plentiful than usual, because the might banner existed and 2/3 of all the players took it, pretty much, including me, because it allows you to be crazy with stuff like channeling black darts and things, just stuff you wouldn't normally do, calling marches when you don't have any particular plan with what you want to do with them, just to see what your opponent will do, that kind of stuff. Because there's no reason not to, because it's for free.
Marching double casters is really disgusting. Yes. For various reasons, including compelling into like protect your heroes from shooting, and then, you know, heroic combating and whatnot.
Yeah.
The Goth Mugmaster battle, I know it was something that we very briefly talked about before list building, where you were saying using Master Battle is going to be pretty good. You also think Shadow Lord is going to be pretty good, Witch King is always good. And if you've got a free might point every turn when you're casting, you can quite comfortably just one dice things with a reroll and a might point in your pocket every turn. And just, you get the effectiveness of the Witch King, but even better because free might and free channeling.
Exactly. Yeah, there's a lot, a lot of value.
You also built this list, and this isn't a slight, so I'm sorry for bringing it up. You built this list going, the Shadow Lords of Warband in Divide and Conquer will be the one that I stick on the other side. The other two will march up to the center, which I think is something that when you mentioned it to me, I was like, yes, that's really good. Knowing that scenario is coming up, I will do a similar thing with my list. And I know quite a few other people have learned that if you know Divide and Conquer is coming up, you have one warband with something fast, which is preferably small, and then you have a warband with your leader and the banner and march.
Exactly. So it doesn't have to be your leader that does that, but your main battle line warbands and march should be on one side. And with this, like, the tactic is solid. It does work. The reason I lost that game, unfortunately, was I got the worst corners and then roll-offs didn't go my way. So I wasn't able to get into the middle to fight for position at all, which is unfortunate. But it does happen. That's why we play dice games. Cool. Anyway,
let's have a look at second place. We've had one familiar name on the podium. I'm sure listeners will recognise this name as well. It's Mr. Jake Rawson. He's rocking the Isengard again. He's got 42 lads, Frasku with 4 crossbows, a demo team with an extra flaming brand, 4 pikes, and a pike who was carrying his king's colours. And he's got Maher with 5 more crossbowmen, 6 more pikes, and a Crabane for that unbelievable mobility. Gorof Ironskin leads 1 wild man of Dunland, 4 more crossbowmen, 6 pikes, and another Crabane. And then rounding it out, he's got an Isengard ballista. So I think 14 or 13 Uruk bows plus 2 shots from Vraski.
Crossbows, yeah.
Crossbows plus a ballista. So solid amount of shooting. And he took did Jake take the might banner?
Yes. Yeah, he did. Yeah. This is fine list. I saw this before the tournament. I thought I wasn't sure about it. I think for me, the inclusion of Maher is an interesting choice. He is extremely vulnerable. But I don't think Jake ran into any Shadow Lords this tournament. So, or at least I don't. That might not be true. But I think this list specifically, I remember thinking that would be very vulnerable to Shadow Lord double caster, like the kind of list I use, because this has 3 heroes who are 1 will. And lesser might.
He ran into Lost Lorien in round 4.
True, that was recon though, which is a bit less of a game where you're just setting up on the lines and having a scrap. There's a few more variables to be had there. But I don't like Brasku as the leader. I understand why he is, because of those 3, he's the one you pick as the leader just because he's the guy who does the most without being in danger. But he's so vulnerable. He's
D5, 2 wounds, 1 fate.
1 fate, D5, 2 wounds. I mean, they all are. So that you don't have great choices. But yeah, I don't dislike the list. I clearly he's done well with it. He went 5-1, same as me, but also managed to get all 6 banners, which is impressive. I actually would have thought this list would struggle with that. So I assume he prioritized it tactically. Maybe using the bomb to blow a hole to get access to the banners. Another thing that was interesting, by the way, is obviously when the banners are prone, they don't get any of the bonuses. So the ballista actually does have an interesting purpose there, in that you can, if you can knock the banner prone, you can deny your opponents the might. I did notice a lot of siege engines at this tournament. I think a lot of people realized that sticking your might banner next to a siege engine allows you to mitigate some of the blinding lights effectiveness, because you're essentially fishing for fives rather than sixes every turn, which is horrible to play against.
Who obliterated me using that.
He did, although apparently your blinding light didn't help you out there, mate.
Well, yeah.
Should we look at our...
Oh, sorry. Also, shout out Stuart McLean, because he bought me Paprika Crisps. Thank you very much for that. I think he also brought...
He bought me some Big Hoops.
Yeah, he bought you some Big Hoops. So big shout out, Stuart.
Solemn respect for that.
And he kindly didn't bring me anything because he knows I'm on a diet. So shout out for
what
that.
Great guy. Next time, bring Stephen 2 Twixes.
Yeah, Twixes.
Our winning Twixes list.
I apologize for that horrible catapult.
Our winning list from the event is another household name, Mr. Jakub Krokmał. He took the Blinding Light banner with his 44 model Angmar list. He's got a Witch King with 3 might, 14 will, 3 fate.
13 fate. Whoa.
33 fate.
a horse, Crown of Morgul, 1 Deadmar Spectre, an Orc Warrior with spear carrying the King's colors, 8 Orcs with shield, 8 Orcs with spear, Birder, 2 Deadmar Spectres, 3 Orcs with shield, 2 Orcs with spear, an Orc Captain on Warg with 3 Warg Riders with shield, and a Shade with 6 Warriors with shield and 6 with spear.
Yeah, I mean, this is pretty good. I like this. So the King's colors he chose was the Blinding Light. So he essentially was telling me earlier today that he essentially took the... He rolled the dice and was like, if I play against any of these Mordor lists, I'll lose. But
he didn't.
He took the risk and he didn't play any Mordor lists. So the Shade and the Blinding Light meant that he was able to go up against Isengard, even at Lords of Battle, where any wounds done are going to be very hard to mitigate, because you basically just have to slog up the board. But this is a slow list. Like he was saying, like, this was a list that was built to deal with the fact that everyone is going to have infinite might. This is a list that doesn't need to go first. This is a list that just rocks up, pops the Shade on, and then just very slowly grinds. Pretty much the only thing I'd consider changing on this is I think putting the banner on a Spectre is like an opportunity one can use here. But having said that, if it was take the effort to convert, you know, actually, the other thing is, you kind of want it in the middle of your battle line as well. So maybe you want your spec, because it's the Blinding Light banner. Maybe you are happy to have your Spectres running around on the flanks going after objectives because they're Courage 6. I saw a few Angmars with the Courage banner, and I saw a few Angmars with the Might banner, and this one came out on top. Also, I want to point out that all 3 of the podium have won GBHR 100s this year, which is interesting.
He also played 2 other Angmar players, I believe. Yeah. Both of which had the Might banner, which is just like the ultimate flex. He did have the Shade, which is very helpful, but
like, does the Shade do anything against opposing Angmar?
It does, affects enemy Angmar.
It affects anything that's not friendly Angmar.
Friendly Angmar. Rip cave trolls.
Yeah.
Gone too soon. No. Warg Riders. Actually, dismounted Angmar Warg Rider Wargs. Fine. Wild Wogs? Hell no.
Yeah. Interestingly enough, actually, I'm just looking at a few of the other Angmar players. They all had a lot of Angmar mirror matches. So Matt Lingard, for example, he had 2 Angmar mirror matches. I think Natalie also had a couple. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Let's look at how this has affected the year's podium stats.
Mm-hmm.
So we've added a few more hundreds to the list. Isengard is coming out on top with
Isengard.
4. Spelling's hard.
That's fine. That is correct. I'm just mocking you.
So yeah, Isengard is kind of the leader at the moment. Mordor is starting to creep back up to kind of top of the pack, like we saw last year.
Maybe.
Angmar doing well. Army of Lake Town, no success this weekend, still kind of on top. Minas Tirith is still dominating 90s.
Army of Lake Town could have been a rogue choice this weekend. Courage banner, 700 points. I think that would have been pretty good.
Blinding Light banner wouldn't have been the worst.
Well, I mean, play it like Goblin Town, like the Goblin Town with Courage banner.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Shout out Pete Harvey, by the way. Had a wonderful game against him. Yeah, he narrowly missed the podium. And yeah. Could
have captured more King's Colours. Oh.
Lovely guys. Shout out you and Larry. Nice to play against you,
right.
So that's the stats. Let's look at the comments. It's been a quieter week in the YouTube comment section. I don't know. Do you guys all hate the pod now? Are we
must do.
Not providing enough crack?
It's now we've posted a bat rap again. People are back on that. So
people are happy about the bat raps.
Yeah. We'll let the bat raps die out slowly again and then boom, podcast. So J Max Armies of Middle Earth, fantastic channel, said crack is never needless. J Max is Scottish, so I'm not entirely certain which type of crack he's referring to.
No, I was about to say something bad. I'm not going to say that.
Oh, we're going to get cancelled, aren't we?
No, I'm saying it smacks at the Scottish you're known for, isn't it?
Smack and crack.
I'm not a connoisseur.
Is statistically, Scotland, I think, has a quite serious heroin. So.
Yeah, train spotting. Yeah. Bingham 15 says, big fan of the pod. Had some success at my first tournament running Isengard at 750 points. Could you recommend a 500-point version?
You can play at 500. If you want to play crossbows at 500, I had a think about this earlier when I saw this comment. You can get Vrasku, Gorolf, and an Orc Captain with no additional gear, plus 12 crossbows, a couple of Warg Riders, I think 11 pikes and 10 spearmen, Orc spearmen. And that's pretty hefty numbers. I think that's, what, 36 models? 38 models, maybe? Let me quickly add that up.
Bingham, if you go back
that's
30, watch...
that's 38 models. That's pretty good with 14 crossbow shots. There are other versions you can do, but I think if you're playing Isengard, I think crossbows are kind of the thing that they do better.
Yeah.
And we'll look at our that's no first, banner as well, by the way.
Have a look at our first episode on the pod where we cover Into the West. Jay Acharya won a 450-point tournament with Isengard.
That was on the list that was quite similar to what I just described, although he had a ballista.
Cool. Free Run DJs says, Denby accused of racism claims. I can't be racist. I have Australian friends. Props for remembering his YouTube username.
That's Dirk Jan, by the way.
It's Dirk Jan.
I recognise his picture.
For those of you not aware, that's a reference to the classic, you're accused of racism and you say, I can't be racist. I have friends that are of whichever group. Similar to homophobia. It was me being funny. Sorry. Mm.
Moving swiftly on.
Moving on. What does Robert Stevens say, John?
What is your favourite monster in MESBG?
I'm glad you asked, Robert Stevens 3847. It's Shelob.
It's Gulliver.
Shelob is the best monster in MESBG.
Gulliver.
Except for all the times when she's not. I really like Shelob. I think she's actually like a really interesting tech. I think the actual best is probably the Spider Queen.
Spider Queen is the best.
But I think Shelob is underrated and the queen of my heart. So I'm going to try and get her into one of my, maybe an 800 point list coming up soon. Because
I really like Moria Dragons.
To be fair. They are
an aficionado of the Cult of the Double Dragon. Shout out James Braun and Jamie Giblin.
What a timely throw. Yeah.
Legends from the past.
I'm sure they both watch.
Yeah, absolutely.
God, imagine if JV Giblin was in our comments. I'd be so happy.
I'd be so hyped. Dragons are really cool because you can customize them. And if you give them every upgrade, they become Smaug, but better.
They can't have every upgrade.
I know they can only have two.
Also, they're some of the most horribly pointed upgrades in the entire game.
Yes.
Like, genuinely disgustingly badly pointed. Yeah. Breathe Fire in particular is hysterically poorly pointed. Like you're like paying 50 points for a three-shot shooting attack that you can miss that also interacts with your most important stat. Yeah, no. Also, they're courage 4. Why are they courage 4? Make them courage 6. Yeah. Or 5 if you want that.
Yeah.
Or give them more will. Or free will. Dragons
but it's
deserve
about favorites,
better.
Not how to buff them.
That wouldn't make them busted. That would just make them playable. They're rubbish.
Dave, if you keep talking, we're going to have to skip Dewey's comment.
Oh, God.
Keep talking.
Do that.
Okay. Beardy Fluffback says,
no, go back to Dewey. He's my boss. I can't.
Dewey is the GBHL bosses.
Grand Overlord.
He's been on the pod. Give him a break.
Yeah. Wait, you guys are getting paid?
Yeah.
Guardians of Wiltshire, Dewey Evans says, hey, all, love the podcast, obviously, with 3 exclamation marks. He's responding to Stuart McLean's comment about list submission and faction put into long shanks. Yeah. Matt asked for lists in his Google form and completely forgot to sort it for long shanks, showing great organisational skills from the chairman of the GBHL. Or Lee Corn.
I mean, I also didn't put my list on long shanks for this is for the tournament 2 weeks ago. So, you know, understand.
Yeah, in defense to Matt, who, you know, doesn't need much defending, his co-TO was actually ill that weekend, so he did have to do a lot of stuff on his own. So
He was doing long shanks the sort of he's doing the old fashioned way away. It was on long shanks, but he put all the scores in himself. So
yeah.
I mean, go figure. Nothing really wrong with that.
Beardy Fluffbag lets us know about his tournament that we covered on a previous episode where Chris Webster did the list challenge. That's if you brought a Baggins and a wizard?
Yes.
Yeah. You got to pick one of the scenarios for the tournament. And he picked capture and control. Let us know which Baggins and which wizard. Was it kind of Fluffy Gandalf and Bilbo or
Survivors of Blaketown?
Thingy. Or was it Saruman and Lobelia Sackville Baggins in some sort of horrible alliance?
Saruman and Hobbits used to be a thing, right?
I won my very first GBHL 100 with Saruman and Hobbits.
I knew that. I was just giving you a chance to brag.
Back in 2017, Saruman, Randwill and a warband of Wood Elves, and then three warbands of Hobbits. I think it was like 40 something models. 50. It might have been 50 models, I think, actually.
David Jackson 39 says, surely it's time to call a GBHL truce in response to Kylie's throwing gauntlet. Put an Articon team together consisting of the best GBHL players and accept the challenge is what.
I feel like if we did that, that team would definitely win Articon. But that's the fun of it, right? That's the point of banding together as the best in the GBHL. If we could put together an actual top, just a GBHL top team, like a Masters team or something, I think not winning Articon would be a poor result if that was what we were going to try and do.
Yeah.
It's a big claim.
The people who've won Articon in the past, a lot of them would be part of that team anyway. So
yeah, I mean, if you throw together like the top 9 qualifiers for Masters, for example, for this year, the Masters is in 2 weeks. So I'm sure we'll talk about it soon. If you took the top 9 ranked qualifiers and threw them on an Articon team, I have no doubt that team would win Articon.
See what the Aussie's response is.
Well,
Carson Howard says, I've been listening to a podcast on YouTube from Good Enough Scenery. He's been doing battle company talk-throughs for the community rules. They have taken out Rangers of the North and Army of the Dead and split up the hero pass into 14 separate ones. Very interesting, and he recommends a listen to everyone on the channel and in the comments if you've got the time. Just don't let it get in the way of listening to the Enna Heroics podcast.
Very true.
Top answer.
Agreed. I think Chris Ryder sent me those rules, and I looked through them, and they actually... Yeah, he did. They actually like really fix a lot of the issues that I had with the rules.
Do they simplify it or make it more complex?
They probably make it like 10% more complicated, which for battle companies balance. is fine for the interest of balance, because basically the path of the warrior was the path you take for literally everyone, because it was like you get burly and access to a two-handed weapon, you get heroic strike, you get +1 attack, +1 wound, and path of the ranger was like you can re-roll climb checks.
Access to a sniper rifle.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas now you can buy a Barrett 50 cal. So
so that
Pippin had a sniper rifle or something.
There was someone had converted a Gandalf the Grey with a I think it was an AK-47. I don't remember where I saw it.
Yes, yeah. I've seen that.
Yeah, it was pretty lit.
Maybe we'll try and slot in either the Pippin sniper rifle meme, or if Dave can find the photo, we'll pop it on screen.
Gotta find the photo.
Yeah, I can't find the converted version, but I can find the like just edited version online.
Right.
Yeah, shout out Carson, by the way, because you're clearly one of our podcasters' super fans. So shout out.
That brings us to the end of our pod.
Yeah. Drop us some more comments. Only 10. I can't say more things to get myself cancelled if you only leave 10 comments.
Yeah, I was going to say we've said some pretty inflammatory things, you know.
Yeah, so hopefully we'll get some more comments.
Yeah, that's it. We're fishing for controversy.
I can never go back to Scotland.
I mean, there's nothing... Oh, actually, no, I can... There's enough GBHL 100s in Scotland that I don't think I can afford to get banned in Scotland.
Also, I really want to go to the scouring next year. I really want to go to the scouring of Stirlingshire, hopefully this year, if not next year.
That would be nice, wouldn't it?
Because it's one of the OG ones that I always wanted to go to when I was younger, but never had the money or the travel bunnies to go. And now I do. So, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we'll do a road trip.
Yeah. Thank you, everyone, for coming along and listening to our ramblings. Remember to comment, like, share, subscribe, support your Hobbit hobby, check out our Firestorm affiliate code. If you do have tournament results from abroad that you want to give us, as I say, get in contact. We'll almost certainly try and fit you in somewhere. Until then, stay chittery, chitter chitter.
Stay chittery, everybody. Chitter chitter.
I brought this from Firestorm Games. I bought these from Firestorm Games.
We're very, very proud here at Any Heroics to be affiliated with Firestorm Games.